Chamberlain Dovin 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 Namadhi Maya Dovin 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 Dovin
Last time we sat together and discussed this, there's one verse that we read about Kunti Devi's amazement. As she was speaking to Krishna, she said, "My dear Krishna, Yashoda took up a rope to bind you when you committed an offense. And your perturbed eyes," what does perturbed mean?
Disturbed.
"Disturbed eyes overflooded with tears." Now try to see this picture. "My dear Krishna," she's saying to Krishna, who's now the king in Dwarka, and the battle of Kurukshetra is finished. "My dear Krishna, Yashoda took up a rope to bind you when you committed an offense." What was the offense?
Stealing butter from pots.
From the pot. But mother, Krishna broke the butter pot because when he had just woken up, he immediately went to his mother who was churning butter. And while she was churning butter, she was singing about him. She was singing songs about him because her consciousness was always absorbed in thoughts of him. And then, when Krishna came, she immediately stopped her churning butter and started feeding him her milk for the breast. And then Krishna was very happy, but then suddenly she saw that a pot of milk inside the house was boiling over, because that's what happens to milk when you don't watch it very carefully, or even when you do watch it carefully, it very often boils over, and it foams and boils. And then, so she put Krishna down to take the milk off the flame, and Krishna was so upset. It only took her a few moments to do this, but Krishna was so upset. And when one thinks about it, the milk was to please Krishna, but she displeased Krishna to take care of something that was meant for Krishna's pleasure. So this is actually, there's one verse, Tadiyanam Samacharam, which describes that the things that are tadiya, or related with Krishna, are even more important in one sense than Krishna himself. Let's see if you can avoid looking at the computer. Can you do it? Can you? You sure? Okay, we'll keep you up. Okay, watch this. So, but Krishna became so angry, he bit his lip. It's a little boy. And then he said, "Oh, my mother has been so cruel to me." He was crying. You know, and now I'm going to do something very naughty. So he broke the pot of butter, and then, because he was angry, and when we're angry, we can do all kinds of naughty things. So he broke the pot of butter, and crying and feeling himself very justified that I'm correct because in doing this, because she has acted so incorrectly. So I'm correct, since he broke the pot of butter, and the yogurt that she was churning into butter, it spilled all over the ground, and he walked through it, and then he went into the storehouse and was stealing butter, and then took more butter. It's a very long and wonderful pastime. And then he was feeding it to the monkeys. He had climbed up an overturned churning container. And Mother Yashoda came out, and she saw that the pot was broken, and the yogurt had spilled all over, And where was Krishna? He was nowhere to be seen. So she thought, the pot is broken. My boy Krishna is very naughty, and he's nowhere around, and there are footprints that look remarkably like his going through the yogurt. So therefore, I surmise that there was a little boy who did it. So she followed him, followed the footprints, and she saw him feeding butter to the
monkeys.
And she was, and Krishna was saying, and the monkeys were so full already, they wouldn't even take any more. And Krishna was saying, this butter is so useless that even the monkeys won't eat it. And he was so upset, so saying these things. And the mother sort of saw him, and he saw her, and he began to run. And he ran and ran, and he was crying, and it was all her fault anyway. And then she caught him, and she picked up a stick, saying, you're such a naughty boy. And then he really became afraid. So at that point, when he was very, very, very afraid, tears were running down his eyes, and he was afraid that he was going to get punished from his mother, who was very upset. She put down the stick later and said, oh, it's not good that if he's overly afraid. And then he said to her, Srila Vishnu Thakavati Thakur, Srila Goswami describes, and he said to her, if you punish me, I'm going to run away to the forest and I'll never return. He was so upset, so angry, and she was so determined what will happen to this boy if he just keeps on stealing. So therefore, to stop him from running away to the forest, and she didn't want him overly afraid because of the stick, but to stop him from going to the forest, running away, because he had threatened that, of course he wouldn't, but she decided to tie him up to the wooden grinding mortar. And then later, we'll go back and there's actually some really wonderful paintings of this pastime performed by, done by some of the devotee artists, really wonderful. But then later, she told all the boys to stay around Krishna, all his friends. And the boys stayed around Krishna. Krishna was crying and crying and crying. The boys were so unhappy. And then as soon as Mother Yasoda left, they started laughing and playing. And then Balaram came and he saw Krishna was tied up. And he said to Krishna, who has tied you up? Who has done this? He became so angry. Who has tied you up? I will destroy that person. Who has done this? And Krishna said, Mother Yasoda. And Balaram said, oh. Because Balaram was never afraid of anyone, but he was afraid of Mother Yasoda. And he was always did everything that she said. So he started chastising Krishna. Why are you so naughty? Why are you always doing these things? And he wouldn't untie him. He wouldn't untie Krishna. But here, Kunti Devi knows about this pastime, even though it happened so many years ago, because Krishna is now the king. And she's remembering it, thinking of the inconceivable nature of Krishna. He's the soul of the universe. He's the source of everything. He doesn't do anything because he's only interacting with his own energies. He's the force of the universe, the life of the universe. Without Krishna giving life to the universe, it wouldn't have any life. He is the super soul. He is the Paramatma. And the Paramatma gives, just like the soul gives life to the body. Like the soul gives life to the body, and without the soul, have you ever seen a body without a soul? You? Well, just look outside. There's trees. There's tree bodies. But they're dead. Have you ever seen a dead tree? How do they look?
not very pleasant.
No, they look quite dead. There's no life in them.
Yeah.
So what's so it's like that with all bodies. If you look over here, you can see a millipede dead body too. But later.
I don't think I would like to see it.
Huh?
I don't think I would like to see it.
Okay. But human dead bodies are very, very different from human live bodies. As tree dead bodies are different from tree, there's something missing. And that something missing is the source of the life. And that source of the life is the soul. And the soul is actually the person. The source of the life in all bodies is actually the person. That's the person, not the body is the person. And we see this because we continuously change our bodies. We think we're growing, but actually, I mean, some of us don't. Yeah, we are all growing. Some of us are growing up and some of us are growing old, but we're all growing. Even the ones who are still growing up are growing old, but they don't know it yet. And, you know, the example of the that is always given is like, it doesn't apply. Well, it does still apply, even when you're making videos. But in the old film days, there's different frames. And still when you make an animation or cartoon, you make one frame and another frame and another frame and another frame and another frame. And each frame is slightly different from the other. And even though each frame changes, but when you play it, the frames quickly, the eye can see 24 frames a second and not notice any abrupt movements. So if you have 24 frames a second, then it appears that there's a fluid change going on, or fluid growth, for example. And they, yeah, but actually it's changing. If you look at it in its different segments, in each of the different frames of the movie or the video, you see that it's actually not growing. It appears to be growing, but it's different changes that take place. So Krishna is the life of the universe. As the soul gives life to the body, it is Krishna that gives life to the universe, because it's very difficult to understand. Even the scientists ask this question and the philosophers ask this question. Why is there something instead of nothing? Did you know they asked that question? Why is there something instead of nothing? And of course, they don't know why there is something from the scientific methodology, because they don't know that the universe has a creator, and I've seen Prabhupada comment on this about the Buddhists, and the scientists basically have the same philosophy as Buddhists, is that their only way out of thinking that there's a creator, and they don't have the mentality generally to accept there's a creator. So then they come to the conclusion that the universe is eternal. That's the only way out of it. One of the only ways out of it. That the universe must be eternal, and therefore it doesn't need a creator, so therefore we don't have to say that there's a God. They're so determined to say there's no God. So, not all the scientists, but there's quite a few that tend to be towards atheism. Did you want to explain something? Oh, I thought you were raising your hand.
No.
All right, but those two figures had involuntarily come up, because counting makes sure they're all there. Were they all there? That's reassuring. So, and Prabhupada explains, but that's so contrary that it's eternal. It's so contrary to all our experience. Why assume it's eternal? Do we see anything in this world that's eternal, that doesn't change, that doesn't shift, that doesn't die, that doesn't come into being, that doesn't stay for some time and then dissipate? Governments come and go, people come and go, plants come and go. Everything is changing. And they also have... And so, So they have these problems, because even with the newest science that comes, I won't make this a science class, don't worry. But previously in the 1900s, early 1900s, they were saying that everything, the universe is eternal, the scientists. And then they, through their scientific methodology, they saw that the universe is expanding. So something that's expanding can't be eternal, because then you say it's eternally expanding, so it has to, that means if you play it backwards, it had to come from somewhere, it can't be eternally expanding. So then that's when they came up with the Big Bang Theory. And then naturally one asks, well, what happened before the Big Bang? What was there? So then they say, and they even say, it's very interesting, they say that time was, and space was created from, at the time of the Big Bang, so there was no time, and there was no matter, and there was no space, material space or anything like that. And then, but there's no God or anything who created it. But then it's interesting, so they say it must have come from something that was beyond time, beyond space, non-material. So they're basically saying the same thing. But then they think, oh, we can't say that, so we have to come up with a different theory. So then they come up with these wild theories that Big Bangs have been going on forever, just like exploding and contracting and exploding and contracting. So they come back to the same point, that is eternal. But they can't, of course, no one can prove that, because it was at least, they say, 13.5 or 8 billion years ago. So how are they? No one was there to know. And how, that's not science anymore when you're talking about that. The science has to be experimentally proved. So Krishna is the one who gives life to it, to the whole universe. And without Krishna being there, there's no explanation of, without some supreme being, without God, without Krishna, Parameshwara, there is no explanation to why something exists even, as opposed to nothing existing. And something can come from nothing, right? Can something come from nothing? What do you think?
No.
Why?
Because there's nothing to start off with.
Yeah, because nothing isn't something that's called nothing.
Yeah.
It's actually nothing. So if something had the capacity to come from nothing, that would mean that nothing had within it the capacity to make something, and then it's not nothing anymore.
Yeah.
So it's a problem.
It's a something.
It's a something. It's a something that looks like nothing, but has the capacity to turn into something. So yeah. It is a problem. So the scientists, like atheist scientists, thinking we have to figure out some way out of this problem. So the latest things that they figure, the astrophysicist scientists, they think, and then they look at the universe and how, and they've actually basically concluded that it's not actually possible for all this order that's in the universe, no matter how many billions of years there are. And all this order can come from just randomly without a designer or a creator if there's only one universe. It's just statistically impossible. Even the scientists agree with that. So then they come up with this idea that there must be unlimited universes. And if there's unlimited universe and one just randomly comes up like this by chance, then that would explain why there's something here instead of nothing here. It's very, very ordered, and the sun comes up and the people grow older instead of babies growing younger or growing so many different things like that. So they come up with, it either has to be God or multi-universes. There's unlimited multiverses, they call it. But they can't prove any of this. This doesn't have anything to do with science. This is the realm of theology, of proving the existence of God. But they're very determined. Very determined to say no God. But it really doesn't, like Prabhupada said. Because as soon as you accept that there's a God, then he's unlimitedly powerful, unlimitedly intelligent, and he's beyond your control, and that you have to accept that you're tiny and insignificant, and therefore you have to bow your head and worship him. And they don't like that. No one likes that in the material world, actually. As soon as you have a false ego, the tendency to not to want to bow to anyone is there. So therefore, like Prabhupada, he said when he started the Gurukula, he said, if the children learn to bow when they see a holy person, then that's perfection of their education, something very simple like that, because no one wants to bow, no one wants to offer obeisances, because ahankara vamudama, bewildered by false ego, we think, I am great, I am great. And we can see as Kali Yuga progresses, people are more and more bewildered in that way. You can do it, you can do anything if you desire it strong enough. You are so powerful. You can do it, you can do it. If you desire, you can do it. But if you could desire, if desiring was the same as doing it, there wouldn't be any poor people in the world, because all the poor people are desiring to be rich people. So in any case, he's so powerful. Kunti Devi understood this. When, how did she understand this? That Krishna was so powerful, because just before, earlier in chapter 8, there was one son of Dronacharya whose name was Ashwatthama. He was so angry that Krishna and the Pandavas had killed his father, Dronacharya. Who was this? What was the son of Dronacharya? The son of Dronacharya's father's name? It's a tough one, I know. But see if you can get it. The son of Dronacharya's father, what was his name?
Dronacharya?
Yes! We should give you a special sweet for that one. So he was so angry, he shot some Brahmastra, the greatest of astras, the greatest of weapons, to kill the Pandavas and to kill within the womb of Uttara, the last surviving member of the Kuru dynasty. And Krishna, when Uttara came to him, to Krishna, and said, Krishna, please protect me, this Brahmastra is coming towards me. Krishna immediately entered a womb. He's already there, but as the super soul, he was there and saved Prakrit Maharaj. And he saved the Pandavas from outside. So Kunti Devi had seen that Krishna was outside, and he had given her the vision to see him inside as well. He was outside and he is inside. Antir Antabahir Vastitaha. So he's inside and outside of everything, actually. But we don't have the vision to see him. Alakshanam Sarvabhutanam. We don't have the vision to see him, because that vision is ultimately a gift of Krishna, to see Krishna. There's no place where he is not, and we don't see him anywhere, because it is a gift to be able to see Krishna, a gift of Krishna's mercy. So Kunti Devi had seen that he's everywhere, he's inside, he's outside, he's all-powerful, and she had such a loving relationship with him. And now he was leaving, and she was saying how inconceivable he was, that this all-powerful person who is the life of the universe, and that he descends into the universe so many times amongst animals, men, sages, aquatics, but still unlimitedly powerful. It's bewildering, but the most bewildering thing is that when Krishna stole butter, well, there's the first, that's so bewildering in and of itself, because he's the Supreme Lord and he's stealing butter, as if he needs butter or something like that. He's the Lord of everything. He can create, he served in Vrindavan Lakshmi Sahasrasatasam Brahma Savya Manam by unlimited numbers of goddesses of fortune. Goddesses of fortune, unlimited, thousands and thousands of goddesses of fortune have as their heart's desire to please him, and he has to steal butter. And he also is his place is called Goloka, the place of cows, and Sweta Deep, it's an ocean of white milk, practically speaking. And he's stealing butter, and he's undiminished, he's all-powerful. And not only is he stealing butter, but when Mother Yasoda threatens to chastise him with a stick, he's crying out of fear. He's unlimited, he's eternal, he's all-powerful, and death itself fears Krishna. And Krishna is afraid of Mother Yasoda and crying. Why is he crying? Because he's afraid that she's going to punish him. So Kunti Devi sees both sides. Mother Yasoda only sees one side. She only sees, my boy has done this. What is he? Who knows what he's going to do? If he keeps on stealing like this, who knows? He'll be stealing other people's wives later. Actually, the gopis would say that. They said that to Mother Yasoda. If you don't chastise him. Because she was saying, my boy is innocent. He never does anything. This was before he actually, the Damodar Leela, the chapter before. And Damodar Leela, who knows what chapter of the 10th canto Damodar Leela comes in? Huh?
Eight.
Huh? What did you say? Eight? Close. But not right. So one after eight, which is?
Nine.
Very good. What is nine, a spiritual number that is nine of? What spiritual number does nine signify? That's true, yeah, very good. That's not what I was thinking, that's good.
18.
Okay, what spirit, but 108 signifies transcendence. But what does 18 signify?
It's in chapter.
Okay, very good.
18,000 verses in Srimad-Bhagavatam.
Okay, yeah, very good. He got one more than you. I thought of a different one though. How many gopis are there?
16,108.
Okay. How many gopis, principal gopis are there?
Eight.
Yes. And how many deities are on the Radha-Madhava's altar in Mayapur?
Eight.
Huh? Eight. There's eight gopis and one
Krishna.
And one, okay. Okay. Eight principal gopis and Krishna. Anyway, that's nine there too. So when Kunti Devi saw that Krishna was crying, she knew about that, but she also knew that he's the Supreme Personality, all-powerful Lord. She said, this is bewildering. And indeed it is bewildering. And this is, it's most mysterious, and this is Vrindavan. It is most mysterious place. And it shows such a different aspect of the unlimitedly powerful Bhagwan, Supreme Personality of Godhead. It shows him primarily in relationship to his devotees, controlled by their love for him. So just for a second, try to imagine, Hare Krishna, just try to imagine how much love the residents of Vrindavan have, because they have the capacity to control he who is the supreme controller. So just imagine how powerful their love is. They can control he who is Swatantra. What does Swatantra mean? Father.
Independent.
Svatantra means independent. Completely independent. So Krishna is, what does independent mean?
Not relying on others.
Yeah, so who can be independent other than Krishna? Because he's Sarvakarana Karanam, the cause of all causes. So everything is dependent. An English word means contingent. It's dependent. Everything is dependent on something else in the material world. Everything has a cause, and it's dependent on something else. But there's a cause, and 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 a cause. But where did the original cause, coming to that same question, is why is there something rather than nothing? If everything is dependent on something else, then the origin of everything must be one that is necessarily independent of any cause. So he's completely independent. And yet he's controlled by the love of the residents of Vrindavan in such a way that he's afraid that Mother Yasoda is going to chastise him. So just try to understand the quality of their love for Krishna. It is, because the unlimited, because you can't control anything that's unlimited, because then it would be limited. But the unlimited is controlled by something even more unlimited, which is inconceivable. Unlimited is inconceivable, but the ability to control the unlimited is even more inconceivable. And how could it be more inconceivable than already inconceivable? And that, like that, it says that the Vaikuntha planets are infinite in size, but Krishna Loka Vrindavan is the biggest of Vaikuntha planets. Now, where are you going to put that inside your finite intelligence? Something bigger than infinite. So Kunti Devi says, to see you like this, knowing what I know about the Absolute Truth and the power of the Absolute Truth, this is bewildering to me. Or mind-boggling. Vimohayate or Vidambanam. Bewildering. So we'll just read the last part of the purport to this verse. See how the text is different than it was before? Because now it's correct, and before it wasn't correct, it wasn't working. So let's see if we can... Whoops, I just pressed the wrong button. See if we can start it again. Okay, we don't need to yet. Okay. Just, you know what you can do? Okay, just leave it for right now, and then we'll move it up when we go to the next verse. So I'll just read some of Prabhupada's purport. This picture of the Lord... And I'll read a little bit. Seeing the rope in the hands of Mother Yasoda, the Lord bowed down his head and he began to weep just like a child, and tears rolled down his cheeks, washing off the black ointment smeared about his beautiful eyes. This picture of the Lord is adored by Kunti Devi. So a materialistic person will say, how could you worship a God who's afraid of his mother? Well, that was a powerful sneeze, even though the whole universe was shaking. But the devotee sees this is an opulence, an extreme opulence of the Lord, and they love him for this rather than because then he's Bhakta Vatsalya Atma Pajanta Vedanyata. He's the lover of his devotees. That's the most endearing quality of him, of his. So he is feared often by fear personified, yet he's afraid of his mother who wanted to punish him just in an ordinary manner. Kunti was conscious of the exalted position of Krishna, whereas Yasoda was not. Therefore, Yasoda's position was more exalted than Kunti's. Mother Yasoda got the Lord as her child, and the Lord made her forget altogether that her child was the Lord himself. He made her forget that her child was the Lord himself. So why is that? Why would he do that? It's because she was so qualified with love for him. If she was aware that he was the Supreme Lord, you can't extend love in the same way, because you can't punish him, you can't chastise him, which all from the mother's comes from the mother's heart, born of her affection. So Krishna was eager to taste the affection in motherly love that this greatest of devotees wanted to offer him, and it came in the form of chastisement. But he wanted to taste that more than he wants to taste the sweetness of people offering him prayers. Oh, you're the Supreme Lord. You're so wonderful. You're moving the moon, and you make the moon go through its different phases, and you make the sun rise every morning on schedule and set every morning on schedule, and you make the rains come. You are so powerful. You are supporting us all. You are maintaining us all. You are making everyone's heart beat, and we don't even know about it. Just imagine if you were in, you had to make your heart beat, and one day you were a little absent-minded, a little sleepy or something, and you forgot to do it. So people praying like that, and then praying for, please, since you're all powerful, I have this problem and that problem and this problem and that problem, please give me this and please do that. But there's Mother Yashoda, on the other hand, whose love is so dominating over any emotion, any want, personal want. She's only thinking about Krishna and Krishna's, what's best for Krishna, making Krishna happy. So that kind of love is so much deeper and more intimate than the other kind that is conscious of the power of the Lord and then asking him for things too. So Krishna wanted to taste that kind of love that was so selfless and just concerned about him. So therefore he made Mother Yashoda forget that her child was the Lord himself. So even though it's such a simple sentence, Mother Yashoda got the Lord as her child, and the Lord made her forget altogether that her child was the Lord himself. Mother Yashoda had been conscious of the exalted. So it's very simple, but it's so deep. There's so much philosophy embedded, hidden in this, and the deepest of sweetest of philosophies. If Mother Yashoda had been conscious of the exalted position of the Lord, she would certainly have hesitated to punish the Lord. Why?
Because.
Yes, someone said because. Who was the first person to say because? Because.
Because he's called, how can you consider doing it?
Yeah,
because
he's all powerful. When you stand in front of the all powerful, you're like
everything
this.
I'm gonna now.
And you're like this when you're before him, because if he goes like this, like a bug, you're finished. So when one is before power, when one is confronted with power, one tends to be filled with awe and reverence, because he's powerful, and you're at his mercy. So she was made to forget, she was made to forget the situation, because the Lord wanted to make a complete gesture of childishness before the affectionate Yashoda. This exchange of love between the mother and the son was performed in a natural way. So her love is so great, and Krishna's love for her is so great. And this is the nature of Vrindavan, that the whole atmosphere is full with the sweetness of love for Krishna. And everything is natural there. Love for Krishna is natural there. And Kunti, remembering the scene, was bewildered, and she could do nothing but praise the transcendental filial love. Indirectly, Mother Yashoda is praised for her unique position of love, just for she could control even the all-powerful Lord as her beloved child. Any questions or comments on that? Yes.
There is a point at which Kunti does remember that the Lord is God when he's eating.
You're saying
the mud.
Yashoda.
And he immediately takes snaps her back into that she's the mother again, because she gets bewildered. She sees herself inside his mouth.
And the whole universe.
Yeah, everything. But he doesn't want that.
Yeah, there's a comment by Srila Vishnu Chakrabarti Thakura, that when she says this, she sees him and starts praying.
And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains Krishna's mood is, oh no, if mother gets very, if she gets reverential, who will feed me? Because he's in the mood of a young, because of her love is so powerful, her motherly love is so powerful, he's in the mood of just a little boy. And he prefers the relationship with this kind of devotee to any other relationship in existence. So therefore, this is one of the main gifts of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the gift of here. Here's the most intimate relationship that is possible to have with the Supreme Personality of God and the all-powerful, inconceivably powerful, immeasurable, unlimited Supreme Lord. And you can have an intimate relationship with him. That means the exchange of rasa, the exchange of love is unlimitedly great. It's unlimited sweetness. And it describes it. We are tiny jiva souls, so tiny, so little tiny. And he's unlimited, but we're part of him. And then when we have this relationship with him, then our pleasure capacity right now, because we're little, is little. But then in relationship with him, our pleasure capacity becomes his, even greater than his pleasure capacity. So this is Mahaprabhu's gift, and he taught in so many ways. Thank you. Any other questions or comments? Krishna Lila?
Why is Kunti wanting to have that love of loving Yasoda? Is she not happy? Is this that she's respecting?
No, she doesn't say, I want that.
Oh, I thought you said she wanted.
Okay, well, I didn't mean to say that. It was bewildering for her. But what Prabhupada said was that she, Kunti, remembering the scene, was bewildered. She could do nothing but praise the transcendental filial, her motherly love of Yasoda. Because she knew she wasn't qualified for that. But if one understands there's something greater, there's different ways to look at that something greater. One way is to think, this is greater, and I'm not qualified for it. And then if you have some envy in your heart, then you'll do something against it, or say something against it. But even if you're not qualified, if you have a humble heart and there's no envy in your heart, then you'll say, oh, this is most wonderful. And whatever relationship I have with Krishna, and she had such a wonderful relationship with Krishna. But this is nothing like Mother Yashoda's love for Krishna. She is worthy of my praise and veneration and everything. Because no envy. And that's the mark of the spiritual world. There's no envy.
I'm not sure how I could really get envious, but someone in Vrindavan told me that when I asked him, why does Krishna still butter, he said, to take away the karmas of the gopis. And I also, by myself, I thought, like, the gopis might feel honored or might feel special that Krishna was still their butter, but I'm not 100% sure why he still is. Is there any other clues given in the Bhagavatam or anyone else as to why?
Why Krishna steals butter?
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's not the clues that these people of Vrindavan told you. It's because, I mean, of course, it's hard for a person who's not on that level to describe or hear, but there's such a pleasure in this because they love him more than anything. They love him so much, he's all attractive. And to watch him do something so naughty, remember, he's just a little boy at that time. He's not like a 14-year-old who would never do something like that. But he's just a little boy. He can just barely just walk around. Just barely walk. And he goes there, and he's going like this, and they're watching him and laughing. They're laughing, they're watching him. And they're so attracted to him. So they have different ways of dealing with his naughtiness. So his naughtiness gives them a pleasure because of the loving relationship.
I understand because.
So there's no karma because they can't be. How could someone who has karma be dealing with Krishna in the spiritual world? Because the qualification to be in the spiritual world is that you're pure, free from anything material, karma being one of the material things. And, if they have pride, it's not the same kind of pride that we would have that's born of the mode of passion. It's a spiritual pride. It's not a product of the modes of material nature. Like Mother Yashoda, my boy is so nice. He would never steal butter. That's what happens in the 8th chapter of the 10th canto. And then when the gopis are leaving, they say to Mother Yashoda, because they came and complained. And it's all rasa, it's all these exchanges, the sweetness of exchange. So the gopis are coming and complain just to watch Mother Yashoda and Krishna react. So Krishna's sitting there, you know, just like, I have a heart. Me? Steal butter? Why would I do that? Do you think there's a shortage of butter in my house? And he's sitting there and they're saying, look at him, he's acting as if he's completely innocent. Look at him now, he's acting, sitting there like he's just a little angel. And Mother Yashoda said, why are you envious of my boy? He never does anything wrong. And then, yeah, so it's all rasa on the spiritual platform. So then you could ask, well, is Krishna really butter? Is he just pretending to do these things? Is he pretending to be fearful? Is he pretending to be hungry for other people's butter? Is he pretending this, knowing that he's the all-powerful Supreme Lord, and he's pretending to do these things just to make them happy? No. Their love is so powerful, it places him in that mood of being a naughty boy. What do you think?
Yeah, I understand, because, for example, I remember one of my relatives, they get up to a lot of mischief.
And how old are they?
They're really old.
How old?
Around 100.
100 years old, yeah. Your relatives?
Yeah, one of them.
And this gets up to mischief?
She gets up to mischief.
She gets up to mischief. What, does she just steal cars at night or something?
I can't really think of any examples of
that. Okay, good.
Like whenever she denies it, she got up to mischief. It's just so charming and so delightful to
Because when you're really, really old and when you're really, really young, you're really, really charming.
Yeah.
But everything in between is so charming. You have to be a good boy or good girl in between. Any other questions or comments?
In Goloka Vrindavan, are all the four rasas present, or only Madhurya is present in Goloka?
All the rasas are present, of course. Have you read Nectar of Devotion? Read Nectar of Devotion. Bhakti Sadhana Sindhu. First 19 chapters. You know what it's like in Goloka Vrindavan? It's like they never, never fire you from your job. That's how far I was explaining. Because what can we understand with our material mind of what it's like in the spiritual world? So it's so much better. Once you have a job, you don't have to be in anxiety that they're going to fire you, make you redundant, or anything like that. Yes.
I just wonder if you comment. Seems to me that the Lord is so regulated in the material realm, keeps everything so regulated, yet his spiritual pastimes seem very unexpected, everything he does.
Spontaneous.
Yeah.
It's a land of spontaneity. For the ideal person who we follow his ideal example, there's Lord Ramachandra. And for the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who charms everyone, we look to Krishna. We can't follow his example.
And a lot of trouble if we do,
lifting hills. It's really hard. I'll just read the next verse. Of course, in the next verse, in 32, it described. Kunti Devi changes the topic from, let's see if we can catch up real quickly. 31, 30, yeah. Punyaslokasya kirtaye,
punyaslokasya kirtaye,
yado priyasyan vavaye,
yado priyasyan vavaye,
malayasiva chandaram,
malayasiva chandaram.
So kechit means someone may say, because she's changing the topic from how inconceivable Krishna's pastimes are to the next topic of why Krishna actually comes to this world. Why does he take birth? Why does the unlimited, all-powerful soul of the universe take birth in this world? What? Because we take birth in the world, it's not out of choosing to, because we're not independent. Suddenly we're born in a particular family, in a particular body, then you're growing up and suddenly when you're somewhere in, you know, somewhere between 10 and 20, you sort of become conscious, I'm here. Well, how did I get here? And why in this particular family? Why in this particular body? Why with this particular mind? Why with these particular strengths? Why with these particular weaknesses? And then we understand through the Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam that we're placed in a particular body according to the previous acts we've performed in previous lives, our karma, under the supervision, karmana daiva nitrena, under higher authority. We are placed in a place. We don't choose our situation. But why does Krishna, who is under no one's control, who is completely independent, who is all-powerful, why does he take birth? So, first Kunti Devi established that he was all-powerful and inconceivable, and he performs his activities that no one can understand. And now she's talking about why the unborn is born. So some people will say, why is he come? So Kesit means someone, or who means says. Someone says, Ajam, the one who is, because Ajam means born, Ajam means, but the unborn, Jatam, takes his birth. Some people say, so first she's going to tell her different opinions. Some people say that Ahorajam Jatam, that the unborn has taken birth, Punya Slokasya, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, actually it means he was the great pious kings, but it specifically, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says it means, and Prabhupada will explain it also in his book, it means Maharaj Yudhisthira, Slokasya Kirtaye, to glorify Maharaj Yudhisthira. So to have his devotee glorified, Krishna takes birth. Or Yado, of King Yadu, Priyasya, who was so dear, King Maharaj Yadu, was so dear to the Supreme Lord. Yadu, Priyasya, Anvayaye. He took his birth in that family, so people would call him Yadava, Yadavendra, Yadupati, and thereby, just by calling Krishna by that name, he's included in the Yadu dynasty, and the Yadu dynasty Maharaj Yadu becomes glorified by that. So to glorify Maharaj Yudhisthira, to glorify King Yadu dynasty, Malayasya Iva Chandanam, just like the Malaya hills are glorified for the sandalwood that is grown within it. And sometimes, when Prabhupada speaks on this verse, sometimes he says that there are Malaya hills, and sometimes he said previously Malaysia was like this too, was grown, there was so much sandalwood grown in Malaysia. And then he says, but then they have taken all the sandalwood trees and made rubber rubber plantations instead. Did you know that? That there's rubber plantations in Malaysia?
I don't know what rubber comes from.
Well, it doesn't come from chickens. Chicken eggs or something like that comes from trees, but now it's so much more synthetic, but still they use the sap of trees, so they plant the trees and then they extract it. See, everything ultimately comes from nature and Krishna. Yeah, I told you that story where that industrialist was with Prabhupada, and he was
yes.
with the glass. So Prabhupada said to him, what do you do? I make glass. You make glass? What do you make glass from? Sand. Well, do you make the sand? So how are you if you don't make the sand that the glass comes from, how are you making the glass? So the man was, had some piety. So he said, the sand comes from God. So you're taking from God, and you're saying you make the glass and selling it and keeping all the money. So that means you're a thief. So Prabhupada could talk like that in a very charming way, and then the person doesn't get offended. Didn't get offended. So the man replied, the industrious replied, but I give charity too. So Prabhupada said, oh, you are an honest thief. And everyone laughed, and he left. Because he got caught. Because you can't make something from nothing. You can only make something from something. So where does the something come from? The something doesn't come from nothing. Ultimately, the supreme creator of something is the supreme Lord. And even the ability to make something from something comes from the same supreme Lord. Because without, or the, not only the strength to do it, the intelligence to do it, the ability to manipulate the material energy, that also comes from the supreme Lord. We can do nothing by ourselves. And if he wants, in 1 second, he can take away that ability. Did you ever have the experience of you're taking an exam and you knew the answer, but you just can't remember it?
Yeah.
And then suddenly, and then you're doing something else, and then, okay, you remember it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
but normally it's after the exam.
So you remember it. But sometimes you remember something during the exam too, right?
During the exam. Hardly, yeah. Mostly after the exam.
Really? Life is that tough. But how did you get that high grade on your science exam then? Or was that math?
Oh, that was science.
Okay, how did you get the high grade if you didn't remember anything until after the exam?
Well, I said
huh?
I said next to him was.
Maybe. Is that
good
true? Is that true? Did you copy off the person next to you?
100%.
He got 100%. You couldn't read his handwriting properly?
No, he's actually got neat handwriting.
He said. He got 100%. How many people got 100%?
One.
How, and who got the second highest?
I don't know.
Were you,
I got the 6 times.
Okay. And how, out of how many?
Out of 30, around 30.
Okay. What was the hardest question that you got right?
I can't remember now.
What was the hardest question you got wrong?
I can't remember the test now.
You forgot everything. You wiped it out of your memory. And this wasn't even an exam. So you were joking before when you said, as soon as the exam's over. What do you remember, little one? That? When you're a little older, you can come and we can play with you too. But I will tell you something. There's a final exam in life that the Bhagavad Gita says. It says that when it's time to leave this world. And then Ante Narayana Smriti, that we should remember the Supreme Lord. So at that time, when you're having that exam, don't say, well, who is it again I was supposed to remember? My pet dog? Was it the cricket team? Or was it God? Or was it, I can't remember what I was supposed to remember. That time you can look at the person next to you and look at his paper and if he's got 100%. Well, you can write it before on your hand or something. I used to know someone who used to write the answers on the inside of his eyelid. And then he would just blink and be able to see everything. No, it was a joke. Palmer, of course, with the teachers.
Okay, it's 8 o'clock now.
Then it's joking. Okay, what do you remember from the class? Okay, everyone has to think of something they remember from the class. Not a joke, but something. Something important. Something spiritual. Who remembers something? Raise your hand. Yes.
Kunti Devi, she knows the Krishna is inconceivable,
yes.
And also she sees the how the Krishna is afraid of Mother Yashoda.
So yes.
That to her is bewildering.
Yes, thank you. Anyone else remember something? Yes.
Krishna doesn't want Mother Yashoda to know that to think that he's the supreme, but instead he wants Mother Yashoda to think that. Like a mother and child relationship instead of
like
a god and a devotee.
Mm-hmm. Then, anyone else remember something? Yes.
Krishna steals butter from the gopis because the gopis find it charming and lovely and sweet.
Mm-hmm. And their rasa increases. Yes, thank you. Anyone else remember something?
He overfed the monkeys and then suggested the butter wasn't any good.
Who else remembers something?
He acts so innocently, even though he's been very naughty, being able to put on the show that he's completely innocent.
Is it a show or is he actually feeling that way?
I thought he's kind of... He's knowing inside that he's been naughty.
Oh, yes, yes.
But he's looking like...
But not like a show like, I'm the Supreme Lord and I'm making an act. But just he's adopting the psychology of an ordinary person because that's going to be... That's giving the most pleasure to himself and the residents of Vrindavan.
Bhakti can capture what is inconceivable, so Bhakti is inconceivable.
Most inconceivable. Mm-hmm. Not of this world. Thank you. Anyone else?
Krishna started crying when he see the Mother Yashoda come with a stick. He was afraid.
Yeah. And he wasn't just acting either.
Mm. He was
actually afraid.
Yeah.
That's bewildering, yes.
As it can be said that Chandan comes from the Malaya hills, so it appears that the Lord takes birth in the Yadujanasthi in this world, even though he is unborn.
Mm. Why has he done that? Some say, for the glorification of the pious kings, meaning Yudhisthira, and others say they're born to please King Yadu.
Yeah,
that's right. This is all playing in rasa. So much ecstasy that they don't want, even when Balaram is playing with the cowboys and he's stolen away by Palambasura. Because Palambasura wanted to kill him. And Krishna, Balaram was so absorbed in the sweetness of the playing with the cowboys that Krishna had to make a gesture with him by his eyebrows. Our acharyas say that, Balaram, this isn't the time to forget your divine power. So, oh yeah, okay.
So this plan was very pleasant.
I don't remember. Do you remember? Anyone remember anything else that we...
As soon as Mother Yashoda left after tying Krishna, like before she left, the boys around her, she told them to keep a watch and then they looked all sad. And she, as soon as she went, they all started laughing and teasing.
And playing, Krishna was laughing. And there's even more to that pastime too, but we won't tell that now. And Kunti Devi was seeing the scene in her heart and mind's eye of Krishna. Well, we sort of chastising Krishna and Krishna crying. So that's an ideal meditation to see Krishna performing his pastimes according to our capacity. And our consciousness was filled with that
And simultaneously she was filled with the thoughts that he was the supreme, all powerful Lord. And that was, how could this be? Achintya Shakti. Okay, thank you very much. Hare Krishna and good night. Hare Krishna. 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 Hare Krishna.